I didn't know how many would be with us from this morning's class, but I had an inspiration to speak on something that's an extension from the morning class. So some weren't here for the morning class. So I'll just do a little mini review and then discuss. This morning we read from Canto 3, Chapter 8, beginning portion where Lord Brahma is being created by Lord Vishnu for the purpose of the secondary creation. And the details of all of that is going to be explained by by Maitreya to Vidura. And Vidura, Maitreya says, "Oh, such worthy questions you've asked, and a whole chapter worth of questions. You're worthy of your dynasty. These questions are worthy of you, which and you're worthy of the dynasty. And I'm going to answer the questions you asked by invoking remembrance of long, long ago, the four Kumaras who reside, well, they have different residences. They're actually Vaikunthavasis, but sometimes they stay in Tapaloka, according to Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And they descended all the way down, 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 following the flow of the Ganges down to the bottom of the universe, where Anantashesh is there, holding up everything on his hoods. And headed by Sanat Kumar, they requested Lord Sankarshan to describe the glories of the personality of Godhead, which are unlimited. How do you describe that which is unlimited? You do the best you can. He has unlimited thousands of hoods, and with his thousands of hoods he began narrating, and the Kumaras were so happy hearing from him that they began reciting sacred verses and beautiful meter and melody, and Lord Sankarshan became so happy the jewels upon his hoods became luminous, and hearing and chanting can be very ecstatic like that. Just hearing and chanting about Krishna. There's a ring back. And the four Kumaras being requested to repeat what he had heard from Lord, or they had heard from Lord Sankarshan. What was his name? Bharadvaj? Not Bharadvaj. Starts with a B. Some rishi. And he, in turn, spoke to Parashramuni and Bhrigumuni. And then Parashramuni taught Maitreya. And Maitreya is now explaining to Vidura. So in the course of that discussion, the particular focus for today, for this afternoon, is on the exchange between, or the qualification of Vidura, along with the qualification of Parashara, who heard in disciplic succession from Parashramuni. Maitreya heard from him. Vidura, who later on is described by Vidura, that Maitreya holds everything within his heart. And everything means everything. He holds the personality of Godhead within his heart, and with the personality of Godhead is everything. And with eagerness, Vidura was hearing, inquiring. And because of his qualification, Maitreya was very enthusiastic. He was faithful. The 2 points, 2 messages that we Prabhupada presented in the purport, he was faithful, and he carried out the instructions that he heard. This was his quality. It's one thing to inquire, and it's another thing to carry out, to learn and then to carry out that which one has learned. It separates the men from the boys. This is the real standard of faithfulness, because with faithful hearing, then comes the potential for understanding what one otherwise cannot understand, just on one's own effort or one's own limited capacity. We're tiny, and we're conditioned. We're tiny, conditioned souls. What capacity do we have, unless something is illumined? And when one is, as Bindura was in the association with Maitreya, at the end, it's said way back in the first canto that Bindura became a fully enlightened Mahabhagavata. When he left Hastinapur, he was most exalted and respected by, except for Duryodhana, everyone. Very learned, very wise, very profound person. Everyone consulted him. But he wasn't a Mahabhagavata, and he became a Mahabhagavata through this specific exchange with Maitreya. So, that's really far from where we are, Mahabhagavata. And we discussed having the association of great personality, Maitreya Muni. We can access, by the way, these great personalities by the process of hearing and chanting. Just put that message on hold for a moment and expand on it in a different, in a contemporary way. Some of our scholarly devotees and those that are interested in hearing the discussions of scholarly devotees are discussing, is it possible? And the answer is yes. Is it possible to have a direct relationship with Srila Prabhupada if one is not his Diksha Guru? If he is not one's Diksha Guru, can one have a direct relationship? Because if the answer is yes, then can one, then the whole disciplic succession? The answer is yes. So someone who is not physically present, can one have a direct relationship with someone who is not physically present? And not on the, basis of I feel something, but on the basis of scripture. Is it authorized or authentic or genuine to say direct relationship? And the answer is yes. And the answer is then also through sound vibration, through vani, and the two kinds, vani and vapu, and vapu is not possible, but the vani is possible, and there is the relationship through someone, and thus indirect, or through someone that's transparent and thus direct, or direct, just without all the with through or not through. So that part has not been thoroughly explored yet. But it's something that we have a GBC meeting coming up soon in a very wonderful place in Tirupati and at our ISKCON Center. And that's one of the topics that we'll be discussing. A few other ones too. But just taking as a for example, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the page that comes along with the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, the line of disciplic succession, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave it. If you look very closely, well, one obvious one is Brahma, Narada, Vyas, and then big time gap, Madhvacharya. But Madhvacharya, in the lineage of Madhvacharya, or there's a like really big biography about Madhvacharya's life from the followers in Udupi, and in that there's a section where, without all the detail, Madhvacharya enters into the realm, upper Badri. There's something like 5 levels of Badri, meaning, you know, higher dimensional space, not like, you know, climb up a mountain, but it's another realm of Badri. And he goes there. Madhvacharya has the qualification to go there, and he comes before Vyasa and he presents. He made that whole pilgrimage or journey from Udupi all the way to Badri for that purpose, to present his Bhagavad Gita conclusions before Vyas, to get it authorized. And Vyas authorized it. And then when he made his heading south journey, that's what he taught. He taught his Panchabeda doctrine and the application of that to Bhagavad Gita to reach the conclusion of devotional service to Krishna, and his principal deity is Udupi Krishna. Another very wonderful story surrounding that. But there's an example of, through the course of many, 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 many generations, Madhvacharya had a direct relationship with Vyas. But there's others in our line of disciplic succession. Does anybody happen to have a Bhagavad Gita with them? Do you have one in your home? Following Lord Chaitanya, though of course there are many, many very exalted devotees, but amongst them Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, most exalted. Rupa's name is presented first and then Sanatan Goswami. In chronologically following them, Jiva Goswami, their nephew, but you know, in age he was younger, but he from the duration of life he survived them and he became the principal Acharya. And following Jiva Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami heard the narration of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes from Raghunath Das Goswami. So, chronologically, he's next in the line. In this list, it's Raghunath, meaning Raghunath Das Goswami, comma, Jiva. Then Krishnadas, Kaviraj Goswami. Then Narottam Das Thakur, because students of Jiva Goswami were Narottam Srinivas and Shyamananda. So Narottam is listed as next in the line. And then it doesn't say it, but there's a number of generations that aren't listed. They were disciples of Narottam and Srinivas, etc. But not prominent. So as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the most prominent. But there's something unique that happened in the life of, the next name is Vishwanath. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he had a Diksha Guru in the line of Lord Chaitanya, but he also had a unique capacity Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in many unique capacities, but one of them was he was, how to say it properly, in direct communion or communication with Narottam Das Thakur. He was most exceptional acharya. But there's an example of one having a direct relationship. Of course, he's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and we're not qualified like that. But we have seen, practically speaking, persons that haven't had association with any devotees, and they've only had the association of Prabhupada's books, they become devotees. Something happens. So what's that something that happens? It's a relationship, because one can't move from the material to the spiritual position without the association of a saintly person. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastri Koi, Lava Mata Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Koi. One can achieve all perfection through saintly association. I'll share this with you. I have to be careful what I say about what happens when I go to China, but I can share this one with you. One of the places that I visited in when I left Chicago just after the Festival of the Holy Name, long, non-stop flight to China. And one of the places that I went to was way up in the northeast. It's called Dongbei. It's like Beijing. Bei means north. So Dongbei is northeast. It's like New England is to the United States. And it's geographically remote. The New England states are kind of like a peninsula stuck off the rest of the United States. So this part of China is also like that. It's they're connected in some ways to Beijing because it's north, and that's historically the capital of China for since forever. And Dongbei is, there's multiple provinces or states, but they say provinces. And one of the places that I went to was so far north that some of the places around there, they have signs not only in Chinese but also in Russian, because it's really close to the Siberia. And, you know, hop, skip, and a jump, and you're in Siberia. And it's like it's way up there. And so, but I went in July, so it was warm. It was not only warm, it was hot. And one of the places that we went to was a community, a farm community that had just started, mainly inspired by two people. And so one was a woman who found out she had cancer and kind of gave up on life. And well, she wanted to just, first she wanted to go and just be away from the craziness. She wanted, her idea was self-realization. She said all of this through a translator. And then she found out that she had cancer. And then this other person that had just received Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and no association devotees, he, you know, her interest was self-realization, her concern was, what's the use, I've got cancer. So he, through his encouragement, encouraged her to carry on and do whatever she could as her strength permitted, to take some cancer treatments and continue, and he would help her with this farm project. So they didn't have money, but they rented a farm. They have a 30-year lease, and because of these two, now there's something like, it fluctuates from something like 12 to 15, and then sometimes there's more people that come because they're inspired by what these two people are doing, and there's different personalities that are involved. And they're no training, no association of devotees, just Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in Chinese. And they, because the winter season is so severe, because they're so far north, the growing season is only 4 months. So when it's growing season, you work. So they're up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they go to work in the dark. And they work until 9 o'clock at night. They take a break for something to eat twice a day, and then they're exhausted. And I figured that out really quickly, because as I was speaking, they were falling asleep. So I said, you know, you must be tired. Then he started saying these things. And that what that means is at the end of the 4 months of the growing season, winter comes in fast. And within the first month of the winter, the snow is up to the roof. It's worse than Minneapolis. And then, you know, whatever the number of months of that is, 6 or 7 months of snow's up to the roof, and then starts to come down, and then they start to do their preparation of seedlings and things and for the growing season. And then it's 3 o'clock in the morning and 9 o'clock at night for 4 months. And because of that intensity of work, they don't have time for japa. So they just chant all day long. They said, that's one of the rules here. We all day long, all of our, they're volunteers, but they chant all day long. All day long, while they're working, all day long. I don't know if they sing chanting or they say japa chanting, but, you know, all day long. And they don't have, when it's raining, they're pretty much resting or doing something to prepare for when the rain stops. And then they're going to start to have classes in Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. They say Bhagavad Gita as it is. And they just say Bhagavad Gita. In other words, they understand. There's different Bhagavad Gitas, and it's this one, only in Chinese. And it's pretty amazing. It's how they live, that because I was invited to stay, to sit in one of the rooms. Like, they're all the same. And the room is maybe from this wall to that plant over there. And from here to where that extension is. And that's it. That's their home. And there's no furniture except one. It's not that far, actually. It's where Rati is. And there's a wooden platform. And I said, what do I do in the winter for heat? He said, you're sitting on it. I said, come around and look at the end. There's a little trap where they put the coal in. Because this place is, there's coal. So they dig the coal, and then I saw these big factories, and I wondered, what's that in the middle of nowhere? And they generate electricity from coal, and they supply all of Dongbei and, you know, a good third of China with electricity just from the coal. So they use the coal and put it in, and just light the coal, close the door, and you're sitting on a hot seat. And that's the heat for that little space. And the person was describing, you know, how they live, and he said, you know, we look at you, and the person who was accompanying me from Beijing, and they said, you know, we can't live traveling all the time like you do. And I said, I don't know if I could live like you live. But Krishna's in the center in both cases. And how did Krishna become in the center? It's just Prabhupada. Through his transcendental teachings. So, one can have a direct relationship through hearing. So we're hearing, I mean, there's certainly generational hearing from one who has heard from one who has heard from, and so on. But we're hearing the recorded version of Maitreya speaking to Vidura. And we know that it's Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit about Maitreya speaking to Vidura. And it's Sutta Goswami speaking about Shukadeva Goswami speaking about Maitreya speaking to Vidura, who's speaking what he heard from Parashara Muni, who's etc. The way of disciplic succession, we're connecting with disciplic succession just by the process of hearing. And the relationship through hearing is direct. It's most wonderful. Provided, there's always a but, provided we hear in the proper way. If the speaker is right, then what's the qualification for us as a hearer? How can we have that experience that come out of the darkness of where we are to where we want to be through the process of hearing? There's some quality to that hearing. So that's what I wanted to speak about from this very exalted position of Vidura and Maitreya, and then there's us. So there's a verse that a number of you, I'm sure, are very familiar with. It's a nice verse from Canto 1, Chapter 3, the last verse. The speaker is Sutta Goswami, and he's speaking to Shaunaka, a disciple in the line of Bhrigu, and he's describing, but he's answering, Sutta Goswami is answering Shaunaka's questions. One of the final, there are six questions presented at the very beginning. The last of those six questions was, now that Krishna has gone, when Krishna was present, religious principles, dharma sangstha panartaya, Krishna established and re-established and supported the principles of religion. But now that Krishna is gone, because his departure has taken place, his departure had taken place when Maitreya was speaking to Vidura, what to speak of Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, now Sutta speaking to Shaunaka. Now that Krishna has gone, how are our religious principles being maintained and upheld? What's the support? It's Kali Yuga, and it's a dark age, and people are very unfortunate and degraded by the influence of the personality of Kali. So how are religious principles going to be protected? And the answer is another very, very famous verse. Krishne svadharmo pagate dharma gyanadi bisaha kalao nashtra drisham esha puranarko dunoditaha. The Srimad Bhagavatam, just after the disappearance of Krishna, like the setting of the sun on the western horizon, on the eastern horizon, shortly after the setting of the sun of Krishna, as brilliant as the sun has come, the moon, full moon of the Bhagavatam, brilliant as the sun, giving darkness, giving light into this dark age of Kali. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So the question was, where have religious principles taken shelter? How are they to be upheld and maintained in this dark age of Kali? It's Srimad Bhagavatam. So then he says, Sutta Goswami says, in this next verse, I would like to explain to you, O sages of Naimisharanya, that which this brilliant as the sun Srimad Bhagavatam, just as I heard it from Shukadeva Goswami, the most exalted Shukadeva Goswami, and I will do my best to present it just as I heard it from you. Here's the translation. O learned Brahmanas, when Shukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Parikshit, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus, by his mercy, I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him and as I have realized it. Going way back to the first chapter of this first canto, the sages recognize Sutta as the qualified speaker, and they recite his qualifications. It's appropriate. We want to hear from you because you heard directly from Shukadeva Goswami. And not only you heard from Shukadeva Goswami, but you understood it. And not only you understood it, but you assimilated it. And so you're competent to explain everything that we would like to hear. It's one thing to understand, it's another thing to do. I was giving a seminar at Washington University on compassion, contemporary manifestations of compassion today, because it's the age of Kali, compassion is smashed. But there are some exhibitions of compassion. And so the beginning was, of the presentation, was to say what compassion is. So I gave some dictionary definitions, and then I broke them down. There's a affective component for compassion, something that you feel. There's a cognitive component of compassion, something that you understand about the suffering of others. And then there's a motivational or a performance component of compassion, that what you do. And compassion is incomplete. If any one of those are missing, you can do, but if you don't understand, then you can be misapplied. You know, compassion is with good intention, but it's detrimental. Or it doesn't really address the root of the problem. Misapplied compassion, like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, or all kinds of, for examples, philanthropy and altruism that doesn't address the soul within the body, the root, you know, the person himself, the rescuing of the coat of the drowning man without rescuing the drowning man, like that, polishing the cage of the bird without addressing the bird for which the cage is there. So Sutta not only understood, but he assimilated it. And what's the exhibition of his having assimilated it? He lived it. He was a walking Bhagavata, a person Bhagavata. Nashtaprayeshu, Abhadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. The impure, the speaking, it addresses our situation. There are abhadras, or unwanted, inauspicious things that clutter our lives. I mean, not necessarily overabundant amount, but something that's blocking our passage back to Godhead. It's blocking our becoming Mahabhagavatas like Vidura became. Although we're hearing, it's not happening. Because the quality of our hearing is insufficient. Not the source from which we're hearing. The source is just fine. The quality of our hearing is not just fine. Because the word, I'll just go to the purport here. The word in this verse, simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. The word nivishta means that Sutta Goswami drank the juice of the Bhagavatam through his ears. Now the translation of nivishta is not that. It's something like rapt attention. Being perfectly attentive, so that the translation is with rapt attention. Word for word is being perfectly attentive. It's something like what Vibhu Chaitanya was sharing with us yesterday evening about facilitating Bhakti Bhiksha. He's more attentive by facilitating than just being a participant, because he has to respond to what everyone is and to do it properly and make sure you understood their intention, their mood, and so forth. But being perfectly attentive is actually requires more than that. Well, here, that's a beginning. Drink the juice of the Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam, which you hear with rapt attention. Prabhupada is going to drill down a little bit on rapt attention. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can hear at once. He can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna at every page. There he is. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. What's that secret? Rapt attention. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But, somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of Bhagavatam. That's called spiritual optimism. Prabhupada said, a devotee by nature is not very optimistic about, they're pessimistic about finding happiness in fruitive activity, like finding water in a desert. Not very optimistic about finding water in a desert. I mean, a desert means there's no water. I'm not optimistic about finding water where there's no water. I'm not optimistic about finding happiness where there's no happiness. And fruitive activities has a lure, an appearance of, like a mirage in a desert has the appearance of water. But a rational person knows that's not water, because in a desert there's no water. But when you're delirious or you're an animal, one or the other, you think, oh, there's water in the desert. And you go step by step pursuing the water just so many steps away and so many steps away and so many steps away, and you die in the desert because there's no water. Dehydration, you're dead. Similarly, fruitive activities. It appears. But as far as sat, where's the young devotee with his own tat sat t-shirt? Your son? The orange t-shirt with Om Tat Sat?
I think so.
Okay. The Gita camp?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Sat means truth or reality. And in this realm, it's Asat. There's no truth, no substance. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada calls it category, but not substance. That's a long philosophical issue. But philosophical isn't just oh, that's interesting, now what's for lunch? It's how we experience life. That's the purpose. And if we experience life in Krishna consciousness, our destination is Krishna. And if we experience life in illusion, that our destination is uncertain. Well, it's not back to Godhead. It's where in this material world it is uncertain. We're not optimistic about finding happiness in a place where there's no happiness. Na sate vijate bhavo, na bhavo vijate sataha. Krishna indicates that a tattva-darshi is one who doesn't place value in asat. They just don't go there. Instead, they place value in sat. We regard things that we value differently than things that we don't value. A kind of an oxymoron or a no-brainer. But what do we value? If we're valuing the fruits of our activity, then you're a fruitive worker. You work for the fruits of your activity and hope that you'll find happiness through that. But lo and behold, experience says, and Bhagavad Gita says, the carrot is always one step ahead of you. And then the next step you take is another step ahead of you, and it's just always like that. It's an illusory happiness. And whatever it is that you have a sensation, the senses contact a sense object that says, ah, at last some happiness. It's taken, like we were discussing this morning, like a dream. We may feel something. We may feel in a dream anger or fear or lust or something. And when the dream breaks, it's over. But even in the sleep, the feeling is there. The bodily transformations, the trembling, the sweating, and someone wakes up screaming. What's wrong? Oh, I had a bad dream. Some dragon was chasing me. We had this little game when we were children. We would look at the clouds and say what we saw in the clouds. And then the clouds would change and then it was gone. But while we were seeing, oh, there's a pussycat. Nice feeling. Oh, it's a lion. It's just child play. So, you know, bigger children, intermediate children, grown-up children. The Bhagavatam teaches us, the Bhagavad Gita teaches us, it's illusory. There's no substance there. So how do you go from addiction to substance from addiction to no substance to substance? The process of association, and in that association, hearing and chanting and serving the person and serving the message that we hear. But we can't hear the message properly unless it's rapt attention. There's no rapt attention if one's not pure in mind. Well, who can say I've got a pure mind? So, the cleansing of the mind, cheto darpana marjanam, we need lots of chanting. One of the reasons there's many reasons, but why I like the summertime. But one of the reasons I like the summertime is all these nice opportunities for extended chanting. For me, you know, in the middle of June, there's a Japa retreat in Seattle, then I come over here, and there's a festival of the Holy Name over here, and go to Gitanagari, and there's a Japa retreat in Gitanagari. And, you know, it's very nice. And Mukunda's there, several of them, and other ones that I'm not part of. Probably that experience of your traveling with Govinda, aside from some other features, probably really nice. Just all that chanting and chanting and chanting. After he left here, he was headed back for Europe, and Ram Roy is in New York City, a nice devotee. And so now it's Ekalavya, Ram Roy, and Govinda, and Kaliya Krishna, the core four. And they're there at Union Square every day for 5 hours, 7 days a week, as long as it's not raining. And imagine that's like lots of fun. And it's not just fun, it's imagine what they're feeling just from that chanting and chanting and chanting. And sometimes Ram Roy's in anxiety because, you know, he has a little tendency for that. But, you know, because it's uncertain how many people are going to show up. But because they've been doing it so steadily, so many people, each of them have described, some people just come straight from work and sit down at Union Square on a little mat and just chant for 4 hours with them. So they have sometimes 12, sometimes 15, sometimes 20 people just chanting Hare Krishna. You know, and devotees distributing books, and Govinda was sharing with me, some people every day they come and put, you know, a dollar or donation in their little donation box they have. It's every day because they really appreciate what they're doing. They stay for some time. They feel at the end of the day peaceful. And, you know, just keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. It's transforming. What to speak of the devotees that just steadily 5 hours a day, every day, are doing that chanting. Not only, you know, in a solitary place, but in a public place. I mean, New York City is an awful place, but it's a wonderful place. Because people are so eager, they're so open to receive, certainly chanting and Krishna consciousness. Their lives are stressed. They're eager to receive. Anyway, that extended something that we can do to help ourselves purify the mind so that we can become wrapped in attention, is Jeto Darpana Marjanam. Continue to chant regularly and consistently, and strive for attentiveness whenever it is that we're chanting. And not just japa or just japa and kirtan, but what we're doing now. And when you're reading the Bhagavatam, hear the message. Receive the message with rapt attention. One must be pure in mind in order to have rapt attention. We need the means to purify the mind. And something, then Prabhupada says, you can't be pure in mind without purity in action. You can't be purity in action without purity in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. These, you know, the four pillars of this, of anything. Sometimes tripods, but commonly four legs on a table or something that's standing. And that's the system for our life and our teaching. There are four principles, and our four principles should be done properly. The core of them are not to be compromised. Like, not compromised. And for some people, they can't do that. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that if you can't keep your mind completely fixed on Krishna with intelligence absorbed in Him, then follow the regular principles of Bhakti Yoga and you'll come to that stage. And if you can't do that, because some people say they can't do that, okay, then try to work for me. And some people say, well, I can't do that. So there's options that Krishna gives, but for us as sadhakas, the wish, to the degree that there is a desire to overcome my limitations, my shortcomings, my weaknesses and frailties, to the desire that there is some wish to overcome those things and come to the position of the exalted, direct association with the exalted devotees, this purity of these regulative principles must be carefully guarded, and following that pure action, following that a pure mind, following that rapt attention, following that hearing, and that's one of the reasons why it's difficult when we have extended chanting to stay absorbed, because the mind wants to go all over the place. Even when you're doing not extended chanting, the mind wants to go all over the place. The mind is so restless. And if the mind is restless when chanting, is not the mind going to be restless when hearing the message? And some people say it's easier for them to read than it is to chant. Some people say it's easier for them to chant than it is to read. But we're supposed to be attentive to both, and strive at least to be attentive to both, and follow very carefully, along with the process of chanting attentively, is following so these two things, the regular principles for the purpose of purification of action, not just those in those four areas, but action in general. Act in a way that's becoming of a devotee of the Lord. There's a nice curriculum. I don't know, at some point in time we'll have some systems in place where people can learn the bhakti sadacharas. Basically it's Vaishnava etiquette, given a nice name. Bhakti sadachar. In the Seattle congregation, Seattle Temple and congregation, they do this humongous effort. I mean, break everybody's back effort to reach out, and during the summer do so many things that cast a big net and bring lots of people. And so lots of people come to the temple, and one of the things that they offer at the temple is this really short course. And it has a nice name, Bhakti Sadachar. What does that mean? It's Vaishnava etiquette. I don't know how they say it, but it's Vaishnava etiquette. And it's, you know, three or four sessions long. And then people learn how to, you know, be pure in action, at least becoming a Vaishnava. Bhakti Sadachar. Good behavior, good conduct, good character. And at least in principle, understand. And then comes the application part. And from that, then further hearing. They have a something, self-realization course. That's just like an introduction to Bhagavad Gita with, you know, four or five parts to it. And then when someone completes this one, they can go to that one. They complete that one. Then they can go on to the next one. And they have different modules of teaching. So there's all these people out there that don't know about Krishna, and contacting them, pull the net in, and here's how to be pure in action, or, you know, basics in that principle. Of course, these things are there in Prabhupada's books, but to take it into real simple, easy, smoothie, goes down, easy to digest, yummy, nice. It's a nice way to present Krishna consciousness. But the goal we're hearing is to come to that stage where the mind is pure. And when the mind is pure, there can be rapt attention And when there's rapt attention, it's Prabhupada says it so nicely. Drinking the juice of the Bhagavatam through one's ears. Sounds attractive, huh? Okay, so that's what I thought to share just from this morning's class. These qualifications of Vidura and how do we apply them to ourselves. I'll just read the last section again because it's almost like poetry. The word Nivishta means that Suta Goswami drank the juice of the Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But somehow or other, if one somehow hears with rapt attention from the right person at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any comments or discussion? Matthew?
You know, there was, when you were saying, when you were reading the last paragraph, I was thinking about like people who meditate and try to control their mind,
yeah,
senses. For them, it's not possible to get that rapt attention, right? Just a clarification.
Well, for some, it's possible for some stretch of time, but not for a long stretch of time. In short, by mechanical process can be to some degree effective, but not for a long duration of time. Not for a long duration of time means the soul is by nature active, and the soul, and we are social beings, so we want not just to clamp down and fasten it down and drill it down and like put yourself in a straitjacket. That's not, it's artificial. It's most unnatural. So the desire is to do something. And as soon as you do something, the mind is again active, the senses are again active, impressions are there, and the restlessness of the mind and senses will follow. So the real solution is not to make things shut down, zero or void. The real solution is, by mechanical process, the real solution is to purify, bring the mind, bring the senses to the Supreme Pure, so that they're so satisfied they don't want to go anywhere. And then they're moved by the sweetness of Krishna, the attraction of Krishna, the loving quality of Krishna. And wherever Krishna wants to go, I want to go. And if Krishna doesn't want to go, I don't go. So the independent, acting independently tendency fades when acts in relation to Krishna, lovingly. And then the mind and senses have become controlled with rapt attention, out of love. something? Yeah, oh, yes.
I just want to ask if my understanding is right. You were just reading that to have pure actions, we have to have a pure mind. And then to have a pure mind, we have to basically properly follow with sincerity the four regular principles, which will allow us to have pure actions.
That's not the sequence, but keep going.
Okay. I'm already messed up. But my question was, or my sort of, I'm saying this to you to get, yes, you kind of think in the right way, or boy, you really just wasted the last hour missing out.
Okay.
All is, since that we don't start pure, most of us, all of us, so these exercises, as Rupa Goswami says, hearing the Bhagavatam and association of devotees, going to the temple to worship the deities, all of these, the five most potent forms of devotion.
They're not in vain. They themselves will cleanse.
That is sort of the, we have to do that before
yes.
we can get to
yes.
recognition.
Well, there's as I explained, there's the regular principles, and there's the activity that will further purify. If one of the legs is cut, it's not going to work to put something on top of the table.
Correct.
So make sure the legs are in place before you put something on the table. And so along with, if the goal is rapt attention, that must be there, but then the activities of hearing and chanting must be there. So, but supposing somebody has difficulty maintaining those regular principles, what should they do? Continue to hear, because purification will take place, and eventually the preparedness to follow the regular principles. And then you got a table you can put something on. But so, it's like what Prabhupada did. In the beginning, he didn't even speak about the regular principles. Although it was in the Bhagavatam, you know, they hadn't read the Bhagavatam. They were just, you know, hanging out with Prabhupada. And then, you know, they asked. It was a very historic moment. Brahmananda said, Swamiji, aren't we supposed to be following some restrictions? And Prabhupada's answer was, yes. I'll give them to you tomorrow. And then he put on the board, the bulletin board, in his own handwriting, the regular principles. Just as it was in the Bhagavatam that he brought with him, but they hadn't read. And then it was okay. Follow the regular principles. But it was at a time, he introduced it at a time when they were wanting to hear it based upon their association with him. Yes.
I have a couple of questions, but I'm just thinking how to frame it.
Speak loud enough so
yes.
Shweta can hear you.
Okay. I am thinking of a person who is living in, for example, Vrindavan or Mayapur, and has a lot of time, no stress, and can chant probably 32 rounds, 48 rounds, whatever. But there are people who are in, say, Chicago, like here, who are going to work and coming back, and with all the stress are very finding difficult to chant the 16 rounds and finish it with full concentration. And there are people like in China who have a lot of other struggles, and they can't even openly discuss, and they are also finding some time to, you know, do some devotional activity. Is it like the potency, I mean, the fastness in cleansing of the heart differs in based on the situation, like, you know, for the people who are in China, even though they put only like some time, little bit, still because of their situation, their cleansing of the heart is faster compared to, is it? And the reason why I'm asking that question is, should we then think about a different situation to go there? And, you know, that's the point. If you get an opportunity, what should we do? Because we also hear from all the lectures that we should try to simplify our lives. And if that doesn't happen...
Well, what's coming to mind is the verse that Lord Chaitanya accepted from Ramananda Roy as the goal of life. And it's not the option that you just said. Consider shifting to another situation that's more suitable. The answer that Lord Chaitanya gave was no. And what he said yes to was stane stitak. Stane stitak. Stay in your position. Shrutikatam tanavan manobhir. And engage yourself in the process of hearing Krishna Katha. We're in the situation, they're in, each person is in a situation that's suitable to their circumstances, their conditioning. We are where we are because of those reasons. And we could try to move ourselves out of where we are. And if it's done abruptly or artificially, it's not sustainable, and it's not going to result in swifter purification. And that's not the standard anyways of go here, go there. Otherwise, Prabhupada would have organized his International Society for Krishna Consciousness differently than he did. His arrangement was gradual. We go to the holy place, and then we return to our Prabhudatta Desh, our place where we're engaging in activities for Lord Chaitanya, extending the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to others. Not the other one. And emphatically not the other one. Like, you know, so many times he repeated what Bhaktisiddhanta had said, that the Dushtamana verse, where, oh, wicked mind, trying to imitate Haridas Thakur when you don't have the qualification. Because you don't have the qualification, your mind is on all these other things. Don't do that. Go to the place where the public is, where you can give that message. Just take that example of Ram Roy and Govinda and Ekalavya, because they have spent time with Indra and Ekalavya in India, and one of his main services is World Holy Name Week for ISKCON. He's the promoter of that worldwide, and he can just go to Vrindavan and be part of 24-hour kirtan and be happy. But he's in New York City, living in, you know, not a comfortable situation, because New York City is far from that. I'm not even sure. Ram Roy's in a room like this with 15 other men sleeping on the floor. And he's, you know, 55-year-old brahmachari. It's austere. But, you know, that austerity is fine because of what he's doing. And it's in New York City. It's not in Vrindavan or Mayapur and chanting so many rounds. His progress is greater doing what he's doing.
The progress spiritually,
well, for us who are not qualified like Haridas Thakur, extending Lord Chaitanya's mercy to others is one of the swiftest means of deliverance for us, aside from the fact of the other things that I said. We don't have the qualification to do what Haridas Thakur did, or someone that's living in Vrindavan and doing something like that. We don't have the qualification. So it wouldn't be swift advancement. It would be swift foolishness. We don't have the qualification. So what do? We do what Lord Chaitanya said. Yes, this is the goal of life and the means to achieve it. Why not? You're sitting in the front row.
You know, you told about the devotee who performs 5-hour kirtan, sankirtan.
Yeah.
And you said he can be happy in Vrindavan too, but he's here. So suppose say a person feels that, you know, given a situation that it is very tight to perform the hearing and chanting, is it okay to think about a different situation which will be better?
Depends.
It's not
depends on how radical that it depends on how radical that different situation is. You know, you could think, you know, if I, instead of working for Crate and Barrel, could I have another job where I'm, like, you know, one devotee was going through this. He was going through the corporate ladder thing and would leave out the person and the place. And it got to be the point where, I have no time. So he said, you know, I'll take two notches down, please, so I can have some time. And, you know, they didn't like that. They said, well, you know, you're capable of this, and you're way down here. And so, you know, in essence, they said, you choose between being up there or going out. And he said, look, you know, I said, I'll take a significant decrease in pay because that's not where I'm at. They said, no, we won't give you a significant decrease in pay. We'll show you the door. It was, you know, cordial, but that was the gist. So now he has another job where, anyway, he has some the needed time. And in part, how that climbing came about was, he's competitive. Not so much pride, but he likes meeting challenges. So he would meet those challenges. And as that happened, they gave him more and gave him more and gave him more and gave him more. And if, you know, his discretionary time would die. So making a change like that is that may be appropriate. But if it's just, you know, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, not always greener. We've seen that happen. So it depends. What is suitable for my nature and my situation and so forth. According to suitability is one of Sai Jagannath's favorite phrases. Anasaktasya vishayan yattaram upayunjitaha nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagya uchite. So to yukta vairagya, according to suitability. According to suitability is like, what's my nature? And in that, you know, my position can change over a period of time. Generally, our position does change. So reevaluating is good. But not something that's just impulsive or on the mental platform or not guided, just jumping. That goes on, and that's not healthy. I'm not saying you're doing that, just speaking in a general way. So don't be pushed by, if I change the circumstances, things will be more conducive. They're not always more conducive.
I've considered this verse in the context of speaking with persons who kind of have no, it's like everybody has some position, but they don't have like an occupation.
Which verse are you referring to, please?
I'm sorry, it's the Sthane Sthita.
Okay.
Verse. And as mentioned, the Prabhupada came, there's persons also now who kind of have no real, they don't know what they're doing. Maybe they get out of school and then they're like, I don't know if I want to take a job, or they lost their job or whatever. So, how do we apply the same principle for them? Because they're at first looking at...
I would say it depends on the particulars, and I can't answer without the particulars. Depends. That's how you apply it. Sorry. Someone else? Yes.
Maharaj, you're talking about the message being passed in a separate succession.
The pattern being what?
The message, the
past. You spoke slowly and then you were so fast to go down and say
the message being passed through the separate succession and the qualification of the speaker.
Yeah.
Now to say that I've realized or applied the instructions I've heard from you or other authorized sources, is an understatement to
that. Okay.
But in some cases, when I am speaking to other devotees, the intent is somehow do the service to Guru and Krishna and try to repeat that message to the best of my ability. Now, since the qualification is not there, is the message not passed correctly or is the transparency lost?
Or a combination?
A combination.
Well, to make it real simple, yes. But what to do? That's the, you know, you work with what you have. You have to begin somewhere. You begin with what you have. So, one of the important things is self-honesty. I don't pretend to be what I'm not. I don't project myself to others or to myself something that I'm not. But still, I want purification. And purification comes through service, and here's some service. I've received something. I've got my filters, so I haven't received it purely. Since I haven't received it purely, my transmission is also not going to be pure. Those are givens, but now I have some service. So to the best of my ability, with whatever honesty, integrity I can, I transmit it. And because I'm doing the service and because I'm trying to do it with honesty and integrity, there's purification and there's benefit. Even if it's not perfectly received, perfectly transmitted. Does that help?
It does from my perspective, but I'm also thinking from the perspective of the receiver. Am I doing a disservice to the receiver?
The first one is yes and the second one is no. You're giving what you have. And it's not disservice. And it's not that every time you say something you have to put a disclaimer at the front end. You know, this is imperfect goods, damaged goods, here you go. I'm less than a perfectly realized soul. Having said that, here's what I've understood. You don't have to put the disclaimer at the beginning. You just sincerely do your best to transmit. But it's not, so it's not a disservice. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned about purity in actions and then purity in eating, mating, sleeping and defending.
Yeah.
So that's like the start point. That's clear there are four things in there. Purity of actions is a little bit more broad.
Yes, it is.
So what... what kind of things...
What example? You want some examples of purity in action? Sadachar. Like, I'll give a personal example. I travel. So one of the things that I'm conscientious, I'm keenly aware... I've said this in other circumstances. The whole of the Hare Krishna movement is being judged by how I conduct myself. And it's aside from, you know, the four regular principles. How am I behaving? Am I being respectful? Am I being polite? I mean, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing, it's having some impact on how people evaluate. That's just one example. So, you know, at your place of where you teach. Same. So, you know, it's in the home, besides for the four regular principles, it's how you conduct yourself within the family, how you conduct yourself with other people in the school, in the classroom. How you conduct yourself when you go to the market to buy things. You know, are you honest in your dealings?
It's not like all the actions.
It's all the actions. It's what you do. But it should be according to Vaishnava etiquette, how a Vaishnava should act in the world. When you're filling out your taxes, follow the law. And, you know, whatever it is that you do. Then, something else? Okay. Yes?
Further clarification on that verse.
On this question, or either the...
Yeah, the verse that I was asking you about.
Okay. Stane Sittak, that one?
Yes.
Okay.
The position, I'm thinking, is more in terms of the nature and consciousness of the person.
Yes.
Really.
Yes, sir. That's right. That's right. Prahlad, do you have a question? You having fun? Okay, good. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai. Jai. Jai.
Jai.
Jai.
Jai.